Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Dom, here we are again. What's top of mind for you?
Hey, Chris. Yeah, no, a good week. You know, we had Kamala on the podcast last week, and I know her event, the Riversparks AZ Tech 360, is coming up October 1st through the 8th. So really excited. I'm actually going to participate in a lot of the events because I know she's having both in person and online. So just excited to see the mobility kind of ecosystem come together for her event, and hopefully all things go well. What about you? What's up?
Yeah, I've been liking her social stuff. She's clearly focused on that. So that's exciting.
Totally.
I'm just excited. I'm also excited that hopefully the end of three-digit weather here in Arizona. It's close. October's right around the corner.
Yeah, well, it wasn't quite close enough for me. I had to sneak away to Prescott this weekend, so that's why I'm up in here, and you don't see the brick backdrop this time.
It's like you're in a dorm room.
No, right? I know. Feels like it sometimes. Right on. So who do we have this week? How do you know him?
We have Kevin Jones. It's the first time we've ever had someone from health service. So I'm excited. I'd seen something on social and just reached out, and he was super willing to be there. And I love the fact that he also represents an AI company. We haven't really dug deep into the promise of that tech. So that's basically it. I don't think either of us really know him. So it should be a good one. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, there's a lot to be had at a lot of these state agencies. So I'm excited to see what stories he brings us.
Cool. Let's get him on.
All right, here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible. To reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Kevin, hey, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the opportunity to share and look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, it should be fun. We've just found that the best way to build rapport with our audience and our guests is just start with your background. Tell us a little about you. We want the podcast audience to know about you as a person and your background, and we'll get to the things you're doing currently and related to the Department of Child Services soon. But let's start with kind of the foreshadowing.
Okay. Well, Kevin Jones. I was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana. Graduated of Emory-Emanuel High School, Arsenal Technical High School, graduated in 1993, wanted to be an inventor. You know, George Washington Carver was one of my heroes.
Nice.
ended up going to graduating undergrad, my computer electrical engineering background, Purdue University for undergrad, grad school, complex systems engineering, Johns Hopkins University, my master's degree, my doctoral studies in complex systems engineering also. At Johns Hopkins, need to go back and complete it. They use a corporate sponsor project type professional degree. Working in government, they don't usually sponsor PhDs and doctorates. So at some point I will go and complete that degree and become a doctor in the short term, unless somebody wants to give me an honorarium in the short term, I'll be happy where I'm at. But I'm a very passionate about technology. Complex systems engineering takes that people process technology alignment. It's not just IT. It really focuses on what are the strengths and weaknesses of an entire system, being people processes and technology, creating alignment so that they work perfectly together. So that's perfect for a COO. That's perfect for a CIO. And it really helps me help solve problems. So that's the baseline of who I am and what I'm trying to do. Been public sector. I got about 10 years of public sector work, 15 plus years of being in the private sector, from owning companies, transforming companies, selling companies, and really focusing on just being a person who focuses on helping and giving back to others.
Cool. So have you invented anything? Should we see, did you see this on TV or anything like that?
Nothing like that, but you will find some lines of code that have made me a lot of money somewhere. So yes,
That's awesome.
Yeah, cool. So thanks for the background. So let's come to the recent and current roles. Tell us a little bit what the mission is for the Indiana Department of Child Services and how they used you as a CIO. And a little bit now where you're still consulting. Tell us a little bit of that. And what is Cardinality AI? We'll get into kind of the specifics of what happened. Just give the background of those entities so people can understand when we dig in.
Yep. So the Indiana Department of Child Services is interesting. So there's at least one of them in all 50 states and all the territories. But what their focus in Indiana is, their mission is to focus on helping families be whole. So they have two main sections or business models. One is called child support, where they collect child support payments from families that are broken families, make sure the custodial parent is supporting financially the child through the non-custodial parent, or the non-custodial parent is supporting the custodial parent. Mm-hmm. And then child welfare. Child welfare is where we're supporting the child and their need to be protected. So if there's some kind of physical or mistreatment or abuse, we will go in and make an assessment in a home. And if we need to remove the child from the home, or if we need to give additional services and support to the families to ensure that the child is safe, like helping them buy food, helping them get mattresses and clothes, we do that as well. So those are the two main business lines, child welfare and child support. Cardinality AI is a software company. It's actually a startup software company. And they had a product that is purpose-built for health and human services, Medicaid, integrated eligibility, child welfare, child support, health, all of those types of primary HHS services. And they originally, when I heard about them, they were a part of MD Think in Maryland. So in the state of Maryland, they combine all their services software platforms into one. And Cardinality was providing the child welfare and they were providing the child support. And it was really one of those things that allowed us to see, okay, this is another product that can help us think outside of the box, no longer take IT and IPs that are custom built, create an additional impact to states for owning the depreciation of a custom built system, reducing the time to deliver. Most systems in that space were taking 5 to 7 years to get implemented. So your requirements in your system were already 5 to 7 years old before you started using it. And they were not being continuously improved. You had to pay that. So when I was asked to move over to help the DCS agency, they had a project that was already in flight for the child support system that was estimated to cost about $250 million, 5 to 7 years to replace. The child welfare system was estimated to be a 5-year replacement at $150 million. And over time, you normally pay $15 to $20 million a year for that. So I was able to come in and say, hey, I know I have an architecture that I could use to fix that. Cardinality was a part of that with Deloitte and Accenture, who brought that package to us. But I had already invested in Salesforce to start building out the case management aspect. And we were able to reduce our time to deliver from 5 to 7 on the child support system down to 2.5 from a 5-year window for the child welfare down to 2. Now, cost. We reduced DDI from $250 to $220 million down to $40 million. We reduced the cost from $150 million down on the child welfare down to $24 million. So, and the total cost of ownership, we saved the agency for these systems run about 10 to 20 years. So in a 10 to 20 year evaluation, $1 billion. We saved their state $1 billion for the total cost of ownership of those systems. And even more importantly, they're on platforms that are continuously improved. So the agency no longer owns depreciation, They get a continuously improved system that gets a continuous improvement release at no additional cost 3 times a year. So when you're talking about using chatbots and blockchain and artificial intelligence, I already have it. I already have multiple machine learning models in place running. I have multiple machine learning packages and artificial intelligence packages that allow me to implement the 5 different types of AI, applied AIs, to enable me to make sure I can get transactional done. I can give a concierge service to my frontline workers. I can give the analytical analysis to do evidence-based decisions and suggestive analytics. We have all that running live and available to the state of Indiana. And we did that in one fell swoop at the cost of saving them $1 billion in 20 years. So yes, that was an amazing thing. And that was why, that's how they use me, Chris.
You're not very excited about this new gig, are you?
Oh my goodness. So I did miss one thing. I'm a glutton for so much punishment that I didn't quite leave DCS alone. I do have a consulting firm called Chimera Innovative Solutions. Chimera is a three-headed monster, mythological creature. The three heads of Chimera are people, process, and technology. So wow. I am consistent.
You had to get a little piece of the $1 billion savings, huh?
Yeah, man. So it's funny. I'll tell you a funny story about that. But yeah, I went back and I am helping them. I am helping them as a strategic consultant in that team that I left behind, training my replacements and ensuring that they are stable. But I asked the governor's office, I said, hey, you know, if I can do the savings for you, because they didn't believe it was going to happen. They told me, yeah, get out of here. It's not going to happen. I'm like, if I do it, can I get 1% of that? Can you just give me 1%? They're like, we'll give you a vacation if you don't get out of here.
You're going to Disneyland. Huh?
Oh,
yeah, I'll take Disneyland.
Oh man, Kevin, that is tremendous. I mean, what an awesome background, and then what a perfect kind of story of, I mean, that is a smart city, smart state, smart region story right there in of its own. You know, we like to have a lot of fun with our guests here on the show. It is a smart city podcast. You know, our audience ranges from city managers, CIOs, but also state CIOs, university CIOs, university leaders. So we have a really wide, diverse set of both audience and guests. And so we always like to ask our guests, you know, what is your view of the smart city movement? What's working, what's not working, and how have you taken that view into projects like the one you just mentioned?
Yeah, so I think smart city view has probably a more realistic and a more relevant question today with the pandemic that we're still happen to be in. Sometimes we forget that, but the pandemic that we're still in, there are additional questions and concerns. I mean, there is the freedom or illusion of freedom that we have and we like to have, but at the same time, there's a responsibility to ensure the safety of the public. So when you're talking about cities, and I think there's, again, Dominic, you get to that people, process, technology alignment, right? So the people don't want the illusion of freedom being impacted. The process states that cities are responsible for public health, public safety. Well, one of the reasons why I love Cardinality and I met Cardinality is we give states the ability to tap into using technology to not encroach on people and process, give the hard part to technology. Take that. We can provide sensors that are out of the public view, allow you to tap into that and identify individuals who may be running a fever, identify individuals who are showing signs of impacted health, and or give individuals the opportunity to say, hey, I'll download an app and keep it on and I'll do my contact tracing that way. But I don't want to know that you're tracing. I think that we are in a position where, unfortunately, our government has a responsibility to protect us, even from ourselves and from our desire to have an illusion of freedom. With that being said, technology is now at a place where it is possible for us to do that if the cities and states make the investment and they can put people like us in place to help them make the decisions. I think really what we need to see is the evolution of city planners. City planners can no longer just be politicians. They can no longer be just concerned about the one type of currency that they're concerned with. Not money, perception, and votes. They can no longer be concerned about that. And they need to tap into technologists to allow us to help them protect not only them from themselves, but protect the population from themselves. And they, and we do have the ability to do that now and do it in a way that is not as abrasive as it may have been 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, wow. What a great point. I can't remember where I was the other day, but someone said, you know, when do you know your city will become smart? And the answer was, when I don't know that it's smart, right? It's your point of when the technology is working behind the scenes that it doesn't impact your daily life, yet it's delivering a high quality service or improving your quality of life. So what a great point, Kevin. I completely agree. So let's kind of dive deeper into AI. So I talk to a lot of cities around the state, but also around the country, and they always ask me, okay, you know, what's AI? How do we leverage it? What do we do with it? So would love to know from your perspective, what's the promise of AI for cities, states, even departments like Department of Child Safety or Security, or Department of Health, and what's real and what's happening right now?
Yep. So I've done a few lectures on this, and I would tell you that AI is not what we should be thinking. I think what, and it is and isn't. I think more importantly for us at this phase of where we are is machine learning. And machine learning is an aspect of AI, but machine learning. Because one of the things we don't know enough about what we don't know is what the answer to your question really is, Dominic. I mean, it's the unknown unknowns that are the problem. So we really need to establish a machine learning strategy so that we can build the business intelligence, the knowledge to make the evidence-based decisions, to tell AI what we want you to help us make decisions on. And I think one of the things I've been helping with my states as well is really we have to be careful. We have to be able to put laws in place and legislation in place that will enable and empower the people who are responsible for that. And what do I mean by that? So in case of child welfare, I'll keep it in context, but the case of child welfare, we get class action lawsuits all the time. But if what is in place now to protect states and municipalities, you can't sue states, you can't sue municipalities. So if we transfer the liability and create a feedback loop between machine learning models that I can go to my state legislator and say, I have a machine learning module that says over the last 10 years, this is a problem. We need to protect us from this. Make this state law. Legislator, we'll write a bill. Put that in the law. Now it becomes a law. Now you've empowered my agency to be able to go in to put in place that this is either the business rule, because I have five or six different machine learning models. I don't just do straight data. I'll use business rules. I'll use laws. I'll use everything, combination of all, so that applied version has multiple sources. We take that and then you say, state law says we do it this way. We put that in. Now you've transferred liability and risk from that frontline worker, from that agency head, from that leader, from that person who's trying to protect the families to a state law. If you have a problem, sue the state. The state, go to the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court judge, case dismissed. You can't sue them. Now we can work in the area of what we need to do, but the issue is what we're going to always have to do. We can't automate it 100% because there's one thing the machine learning is missing. When you're dealing with human beings, empathy. You can't teach empathy. So you have to have that individual in place that has the empathy to know when and when not to apply in a certain scenario, because the data and the analytics state you do X, but in this one scenario, in this two or three scenarios where empathy is necessary, we have to still remain flexible enough and don't put ourselves in a box enough to where we're automating as much as we should. We continuously improve the model so we know what the standard operational procedures are, and we automate that, still having empathy in those one-offs, but in those outliers, they stay non-standard procedures.
In the Department of Health like kind of works with the model? It sounds like it's refining over time. Sounds like Cardinality has a piece to it, but those that are inside that really understand and have the empathy, like how does that interplay work so the model evolves?
So we have chief data officers, you have chief compliance officers, you have executive leadership that actually looks at this. You have
within the department, right? You align there, right?
Yeah. So let me be clear. We don't have all those models in the department. We have those machine learning models together now, and we have a few that are there, but we're working on the laws to get approved before we automate those. Gotcha. So yes, that's there. But we have a bunch of groups. We have a ton of teams. We have teams of strategic teams like our change control board. We have our teams that are, we call them our rapid improvement or rapid deployment teams where they look at cases and they give you additional insights. All of that stuff has to be taken into account and you get that feedback. But right now, it just becomes more of a suggestive analytical type decision making, nothing automated.
Gotcha. Which makes a lot of sense because you're still understanding the nuances that all these public experts have built over time. And you're helping turn that into a model that can show the data perspective over time. And then hopefully you marry up what human bias might look at differently than what the data shows differently and get different outcomes at scale or different outcomes at some cost-effective way that couldn't be done.
You got to keep in mind, we have two different risk models. I mean, risk prevention, and I look at it from a perspective of risk management. You have risk management with the prevention of loss of property, and you have risk management where you have prevention of loss of life. So when you have that prevention of loss of life aspect, it becomes more of an issue where you need something to kind of help because you're talking about kids who could die or continue to be abused and or we do negative impacts to them that last them their entire life. Mm-hmm. And that's always the challenge. Sorry, right. Dominic, go ahead.
No, I'm just getting excited about this conversation because and the thought around machine learning, because that's always been the difficult part is, you know, for, let's say, legislatures, they're making a decision, a vote, a bill on a point in time decision, right? Maybe they don't have the historic facts to actually enable them to have a more informed decision as they're passing these laws. I can immediately see the similarities to a judge in the criminal justice system that's going to do sentencing and trying to understand, okay, what's the best sentence for this individual given this case? If you had machine learning saying, well, here's the past history of this decision and what's happened after, you can make a better informed decision. But to your point then, but even the better point was you can't take away the empathy. You have to have that there at the end, because even if it says this is the best decision given the past, you have to have that personal touch, personal appeal. This is what I love about smart cities. You can see what you've done in child services and you can easily see it kind of being pivoted over to criminal justice and who knows what else, right? So you're getting me inspired, Kevin. This is great.
But I think where we get confused and where some of us, we get so excited about something that's great and we lose sight and focus of what it really is. A lot of people want to make machine learning and artificial intelligence the answer. It's not. It's a tool. Mm. Technology is people process first, then technology is a tool. If we try to say we're going to automate everything, you fail. That's not the answer. It is a tool to help you make decisions. So how do you apply it in the scenarios you just mentioned? Well, a judge has got a law clerk who's going to read through all these books and try to find cases. Well, I can in 30 seconds tell you every case that's ever in history that's ever done that with machine learning. That's where machine learning comes into play. Boy. Machine learning becomes a clerk. It's not the freaking judge, man. You can't make it
exactly.
The judge.
Exactly.
And so I preach that and I apply.
Precogs are coming though, right?
Yeah, they're coming. If you let them. One of our kids is going to invent that and we're going to be long gone, but they're going to be screwed, man. They're going to be
That's but so no, true.
But you, we so just have true. To keep it. We just got to keep it. Keep it in context of technology is always a tool. Don't make technology the answer. And that's how I try to apply. That's just not being reckless there.
Nope. Love it. Love it. So, you know, Kevin, I'm a bit of a governance and organizational nerd. I love to study kind of the structures of well-performing organizations to see what we might be able to learn from them. So talk to us a little bit how the CIO is positioned within the Indiana Department of Child Services and maybe how that position helped or hindered your ability to do what you've done and all the great work you've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, initially when I came, they didn't even have a CIO. The CIO had become a non-factor. The chief of staff was running IT. They had some IT directors. And then they took another whole entire IT group and put them under the leadership of the business owner of that process. And we all know that's a disaster. That's a disaster. The business owner cannot own IT. The one thing I tell people, anybody in my position, so if you ask that question later, I'll tell you, you never want to work for an organization where the CIO reports to the COO or reports to the CFO. if they're not at the table with the CEO talking to them as a peer to the CFO and the COO, then that organization has no idea how to use and apply technology. Don't work for them. Leave immediately. Our agency, no, seriously, our agency made me a strategic leader, and I was a part of the peer. I was also a part of their strategic board. So there was a smaller group of peers that were there really focusing on change control. And we implemented lean. So we had lean change management and standards processes. And that CIO position was one of four members of that board as well. So they understood the importance of people, process, technology alignment. And I think it was more of a necessity than a self-awareness thing at first, because the limitations that IT had put on that organization, IT was driving. They had no choice. They would go and say, hey, we want to make this change. You can't make this change for 6 years. That sounds crazy, but guess what? That was true. They had changes that were in store from 2012, and they still hadn't done them when I got there in 2017. So I can empathize.
Department of Education has some long projects. I can assure you that.
Yes. So they positioned it in a way that it was strategic. It was leadership as well as strategic leadership.
Makes sense. Hey, so this is the first time we've had someone representing health services on the show. So it's kind of a different view. So it's kind of getting us thinking here. But are there any specific outcomes you'd like to share as success stories that you had at Indiana Department of Child Services? I'm sure there's many. And it's interesting. I love how you talked about your definition of smart cities. You were talking about the public health and public safety side. We often get that, but not necessarily from a children's view, and they should be part of it too. So I can't wait to see kind of what you've actually made accomplished. It's great.
Yeah, there's a few, and I'll give you the one that really started, got the ball rolling for us to do investment. So one of the things, you know, they said, okay, Kevin, we've seen your idea, but tell us how this is going to work. I'm like, okay, give me $100,000. I'll show you. So one of the things that we had at DCS when I got there, we had a staff turnover rate of 54% in our caseworkers. And we have 4,000 caseworkers. It costs over $60,000 to train a caseworker. So if you're losing them, we were losing $70 million a year in staff turnover. What I did was I took that $1,000 and I built a couple APIs into our HR system. And what I did was built have my team, not me, Kevin, didn't do it myself. I had a team of people who actually helped me build out this concept I had, which was I want to build exit surveys, which was also a federal requirement. At the time I got there, we were only collecting exit surveys from 5% of the people who left. So I wanted to do exit surveys from all our voluntary staff turnover, and I wanted to see why people were leaving, because everybody was saying, oh, they're leaving because we're not paying them enough. I'm like, that can't be the case. That's never the reason. But okay, since you guys are government workers, I'll let you keep thinking that. Let's really find out. So I built used Salesforce, built a platform out, and I used Marketing Cloud as well to make sure I was getting my data analytics. So we built a workflow to where all of our caseworkers got cell phones. So the day that they said, hey, I'm putting in my 2-week notice, the HR person would put in our HR system that would go into MuleSoft, grab it, automatically put into my system, send you a text message, you need to fill out the exit survey. Send you an email as well, fill out the exit survey. After 2 days, if you didn't fill it out, your supervisor got a note, hey, this person has to fill out their exit survey, do it. After 3 days, they didn't do it. The supervisor, their supervisor, all the way up to the top of our agency says, John Smith needs to fill out his exit survey. when we rolled that out, and here we are 3 years later, 2021 from 2018, 3 years, we're 90 to 95% collection on all of those. So the first thing we saw from that was salary was number 12 on the list of reasons why people were leaving, not even top 10. The top two or three were, I didn't understand the job before I came to the job. And when I got here, it was completely different than what I expected. I said, that's easy. I'm a complex systems engineer. We use artificial intelligence. We use simulation. Hey, I took some VR goggles and said, all right, you don't hire anybody until they go through this virtual reality simulation of that. So we built out a simulation. Accenture had one, and we worked with them to get it to where we could use it. And we took those goggles, my team again, we didn't build an API and pull the data. We pulled the log files off of those headsets. Accenture's like, you can't do that. We don't know how to get data off those headsets. Like, we already did it. So if you want it, you can buy it from us since we've already built it. Here it is. Look at it. It's in Salesforce. But we were able to pull their log files off and pull that data out. And what we found was I did a business case. Again, being in education, heavily education, I said, I'm going to do scientific analysis. So we took that year, we took we had 200 plus people that we were interviewing in the first quarter or in the last quarter of that year. And we said, before you hire them, put them through the goggles. We put them through the goggles, and from that 200 people, they're like, man, I wouldn't have hired this person these are only people that we were about to offer. I was like, before you make an offer, you do this. And they quickly put those to the side. But then we got down to about 134 people, scenario all the way through. And we said, okay, after 134 people, we only want to offer 59 people the job. So we already cut our risk in half to a third again.
Wow.
Of those people, only 30 said, yeah, I'm going to take it. The other one said, no, I don't really want to do this for the rest of my life. This is not what I thought it was. So with that same population being 54%, before COVID, a year later, before COVID, only 17% had left. We had reduced our staff turnover to 17%. Before COVID, the agency-wide staff turnover was down to 17%.
Now the problem is you've created a new problem. You have too many open jobs because you can't fill enough because you picked them out with the goggles.
No. What happened I'll give you, that goes to my final things that I was aware of. So we save ourselves $50 million in staff turnover. That pays for my system. There you go. So there's one system, child welfare system, paid for itself with $100,000 investment. So then you move on to the fact that over time, you now got the right people.
Cutting turnover is amazing. I was just being facetious. Like, because you found the point in the cycle where the failure was with data. That's great.
So, yeah, exactly. So then we got to the point where for the first time in the history of the agency, we have case ratios where you have to have one caseworker to 12 assessments, 13 children, 13 families. For the first time in 2020, we were able to get to that ratio for the first time.
Oh, really?
And maintain to the point where we were like, okay, we're going to have to stop hiring. We went from hiring 100 people a month to two.
Wow.
And then on top of that, when I first came to the agency, we had 30,000 kids in care. 30,000 kids that were out of the home in our facilities. We were paying for, we were providing services. But by the time I left, we went down to 18,000.
Wow.
We went from 1,700 kids in collaborative care, which means they were not even placed in like foster care or residential or families. They were in a facility, a cold building in a facility. Those kids cost you millions.
What were the top two reasons for the decrease of kids in care?
Well, I'll give you those when we get to the
end. Sorry. I thought it was kind of the goggles. I was like, these people are that much more efficient in their cases or something?
Okay. Yes, there were a lot of outcomes from the goggles, but there's other things that came with that. But you do get that consistency because the term, like you were getting kids who had a case that would go through seven case managers in a 2-year window. So you had consistency enough to stay on those cases.
Consistency wasn't there. Yeah. Just the wrong people in.
Yeah. Makes sense. And we also identified that paperwork was the number two reason people were leaving. So we were able to start moving things around. We were also able to find where, because we built additional surveys after that exit survey, we said we're going to do a 30, 60, 90 day survey, an annual survey. And we started to discover things like certain supervisors were problems. We moved supervisors out and all of a sudden staff turnover stabilizes. All of a sudden kids to permanency timeline goes down. We discovered all of that from that data and that analysis, and we were able to be more efficient and more effective with the people we had, more efficient and more effective and consistent with the people who stayed. And eventually, we even got to a point where we started to look at data analytics to say, why are you bringing all these kids in to begin with? And we identified outliers that said, you shouldn't be bringing in a kid for that reason. And we reduced the rate of kids coming into care by 30%. Those things, all of those things were on our governor's state of the state speech. Now that's the biggest honor we had. He spoke about reducing kids in care by 30%, reducing staff turnover by over 30%, and reducing the rate at which kids come into care by 30%. And at the same time, repeat maltreatment and death to kids, because most people will say, well, if you're not bringing kids in care, you're just leaving them out there. They're dying. That went down 25%. So we did it with evidence-based decisions, and we did it safely and did not impact kids even more.
That's amazing. So okay, so you were doing that inside out. You didn't have these AI tools at the time, which would only help you find the things quicker, right? The machine learning. So talk about how a CIO that may not be as kind of oriented to say AI and ML, or maybe their teams aren't, how do they get started? How do they think about approaching a tech partner? How do you get going? How do you handle the hurdle so that those types of things you just share that you were doing can be done even faster and more, even more efficient?
Yeah. So I will tell you that none of those tools matter without what you just asked, Chris. Literally, that's a great question, because at the end of the day, it was where you start. I practice my theme for my life is be water. I got to VR.
Bruce Lee.
Yeah, Bruce Lee. I got to VR because of water, because I was water. It led me to that. I didn't say, hey, I'm going to just VR and do this. I said, okay, let's start out with, let's find out what the problem is. I'm water. You tell me, system. You tell me why you're broken. And when it told me, the next step is, okay, I'm like a doctor. You say you have pains in your elbow. I'm going to give you some painkiller. Or I'm going to see why. Oh, you got a fractured elbow. We need to do surgery there. So taking the time to stop and say, what is your problem? Not sit in my freaking office and pump out software every other day. You have to go and find out what is wrong. You have to be willing to learn the process. You have to be willing to understand what is bothering the people and your process, not the people that work for you, but the people that you serve. You are a servant to that organization. Find out what the people need. Find out where the process is broken. And only then can you apply an IT solution, because you can build crap all day long. And if it doesn't fix the problem, you're doing nothing but exacerbating the issue. So you find out what's wrong with the people. Why is the process broken? And then I can come up with an IT solution. In my case, it was VR headsets that help us find additional insights to reduce staff turnover. But we also have other solutions, like we implemented a foster care portal that gave the foster care parents notice that the kid was coming, and that the kid that's coming to you before they get to your house, here's all their shot records. Here's their Medicaid history. Here's the issues that they've had with us. Not just knocking on the door, hey, I got a kid, drop them off. And then everybody's like, what the heck just happened? Literally, that was happening. Yeah. Literally, that was happening. So in that case, it had nothing to do with VR. It was just, hey, we want these people to work as foster families and provide good service. We want this kid to feel safe. And they show up and someone don't even know who they are, and they're sleepy and they're tired. Whereas on the other hand, this person got a fair warning, and they could have a cup of milk and some cookies ready for this kid. So when they come in here, I got some milk and cookies for you. Let me kind of make you feel a little bit better, a little bit warm about being in a stranger's house that you never met before. So all those types of things improve. And it starts with, I have to understand what's bothering you people. Why is the process messed up? And this is how I can fix it.
You know, it's funny, the consistency there, and you leave with that, makes a lot of sense. So we do ask one question of all of our guests, another one as we wrap up. Is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative that's helped you out along the way you'd like to recognize? And if they kind of, as you learn about the urban complex, if they kind of fit the bill of who might be a guest, we'd love to know that as well. So tell us, Kevin, anyone to share can help you?
Yeah, there are a ton of people, and I mean, I can't thank everybody enough. I had a bunch of surrogates because, as you can imagine, I'm kind of big. I can be loud and may seem aggressive, and I'm an African American. So stereotypically, most people are afraid of me. So I've had to have some surrogates to help me. Hey, this is the message. Go tell them this. Okay, I'm gonna tell them you said this. No, don't tell them I said it. You said it. It's your idea. I have a bunch of surrogates. And for all of you out there that may happen to listen, I love you all. You know, I appreciate and respect you all. Could not have done it without you. But there are really two people that I think I could not have done this without. That is my chief of staff, Eric Miller. Amazing guy, dedicated guy. He, regardless of his political views, he fights for the right thing to do for people. Amazing guy. You definitely need to get him on the podcast. You're going to have to pull the questions out of him because Eric is not the most talkative guy, because he's a very humble and intelligent guy, but he's not the most talkative. But the story of how to build a team with a crazy guy like me on it and manage that is a lot. I know I would be a lot to manage, but being able to build a team and a team of people like me and manage all of us and interact with us, he's done that immaculately. He's probably the best supervisor I've ever worked for. And then the secretary of the agency, she's going to be a much more talkative and conversation person, Terry Stigden. Terry Stigden, an amazing woman. She left as a head nurse of Children's Hospital to come in and take over an agency for Children's Services. Wow. And has done an amazing job bringing lean transformation, bringing process, people, technology alignment as well. You definitely need to get her on the podcast and have her share with you. She would be an awesome person to talk to. But those two people are definitely the stories that need to be told.
Awesome. All right. Well, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Kevin Jones, COO of Cardinality AI and former CIO of Indiana Department of Child Services. Thanks for joining us, Kevin. It's been awesome.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Ciao.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
All right, Chris, that was Kevin. What'd you think? What a great guy.
And love the energy. And, I think we hit our goals. He definitely talked the difference of AI and ML. He talked about how to get started, which I thought was really interesting. You've even heard me talk about the flow like water before at an event. And it makes a lot of sense. Like I thought when we asked him, what did he do for health services? And he started with kind of, well, we had this big problem, but we didn't exactly know where to start. We knew 54% turnover of 4,000 folks. And that's huge. Oh my gosh. Like half the groups leaving every year. It's a lot of money wasted. So they knew there was room to play. And he took a gamble on a place based on data. But they started with a process flow. And I love how he kept going back to process and people all the time with his questions. And they found out that it wasn't leaving because of money, which was the hypothesis. They were leaving because they really didn't know what they were getting into. And that's where they started. I thought the whole thing was just great in kind of how he walked through, how he tackles those challenges.
Yeah, I mean, what a terrific leader. I was just so inspired listening to him and hearing the stories of just change he was able to drive, because I think we both know how difficult at times it can be to try to drive change, such a impactful change within these large organizations. So it was just fun listening to his story. A couple of things that really stuck out to me again is this idea of the people, process, and technology. Like, don't jump to the tech, really focus on the people and the process. Yep. And let tech be the enabler, that water, you know, let the water lead you to the tech that you need to help you solve that. So I thought that was awesome. And I thought you were going to talk about the organizational structure.
Well, that's where I was going to go next.
Yeah, it's important. Strategic leader.
Yeah.
Totally. Think about how important that was.
Yeah, he really dug into that. And he also recognized the chief of staff and the secretary of the agency. So you could tell he had deep knowledge at a right level. And what was going through my mind when he was talking about the big reduction in the kids in care, you know that some people might look at that as they're not doing their job. They might value themselves by the numbers that are in care, but yet the right thing to do is get kids that need it, not just have total numbers. And that takes a lot of that. You have to get the right level to have the buy-in to make the tough decisions. I thought that was really important.
It's actually a really interesting comment, kind of being so good at your job, you put yourself out of a job, right?
Or at least change it, right? Because a lot of resourcing comes from probably that metric. And so
totally. But
they're doing the right thing based on data. And I tell you, that has to be a big pat on the back when you get the governor touting your services. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. We all know that's a big win. And maybe just last, I love that comment. Let the community tell us what's wrong, or let the challenge tell you what's wrong. I mean, especially with all the digital equity efforts we're trying to push forward right now, it's don't try to stall it for them. Go out and ask them what's wrong, and then
exactly you got to be out there.
Figure out how to bring a solution. Yep. Great.
Well, cool. I know you got you got a good one for cracks in pavement. Tell us what's the gist.
Yeah, actually, this one was shared with me by Lev Gonick, CIO of ASU this week. It's Stephen Goldsmith, very well known in the smart city space. I actually met him in Barcelona at one of the smart city conferences. But the title is, as the chorus of dumb city advocates increases, how do we define the truly smart city? And it goes to, I think, the question we like to ask all of our guests is, how do you define a smart city? How do you view a smart city? And so Stephen Goldsmith, he's playing on that idea of, we understand that there's no definition, so stop trying to knock the movement because there is no definition. But what we should be striving for is, what are like the broad parameters we can kind of set in order to measure our progress towards becoming, to our point, what we try to do on this broadcast, smarter cities, right?
Exactly.
And so he lays out, I believe, a list of 10 or so kind of general metrics that you can measure yourself as a city to see if you are kind of progressing down that path. You know, it includes things like, it makes public employees smarter in their work. It enhances the way it listens and involves the public. A smarter city uses digital tools to operate more equitably. It addresses sustainability and resiliency. And he lists out some other ones. We'll be sure to put the link.
Well, even just using data to deliver services based on where and when they do the most good, it's a lot like what Kevin just shared. Use the data to pinpoint where to start, get out there, understand the process, change it. I also like that creates the digital platforms that allow the data to happen. I think that's really important. There's a lot in this one. We'll see if we get any comments on the social when we post it.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to have Stephen on and see if he'll talk more about it.
You know, that's a good idea. We'll have to reach out. Do you know him by chance?
I can probably reach out to him through some of our networks. So we'll see.
Let's do it. Cool. All right. Well, that's a wrap. Thanks all for joining. We'll see you next week.
See you, everyone.
Bye. Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.